Suzanne. Quite a lot recently, this week, particularly this morning when I got on my bicycle in the snow, I thought, what possessed me to let Suzanne talk me into doing this? Massive topic, 15 minutes, and the same spirit that Jan referred to, you guys probably know more about this than me. But when I really thought about it, I know when Suzanne phoned me, she hit a raw nerve. I spent most of this summer with either colleagues in other departments coming along and saying, Andy, outsourcing, have you ever thought of doing that before? Partly because, sorry, Wiley, you kick this off, you've got them excited. Or having my production directors crying on my shoulder going, oh my God, we're not going to have any staff soon, they're all going to go offshore. So it's kind of my chance to do a bit of public therapy and just get some stuff off my chest. So I'm going to talk really fast, hurtle through this, and you're going to get the wacky world of Cambridge Publishing, basically. History lesson. I can't compete with Jan in terms of numbers, but as some of you might know, we're the oldest publisher in the world, and so therefore we're the original. Henry VIII gave us letters of patent in 1534 saying you can produce all manner of books, which is what we decided to do. Now, I've got a wonderful image in my head of a bunch of 16th century management consultants getting together in a room and going, what the hell is this movable type fad anyhow? You can't beat monks and quill pens, really. It won't last. And then saying, well, what the hell's publishing? Because we were the first one, so no one knew actually what it meant. And then actually saying, well, if we know what publishing is, how the hell are we going to form one? So they had to sit down and work out what the hell the structure of this company looked like and what it did. I think the answer at the time was a publisher did absolutely everything to make the book. But if we're the first publisher, then they must have had to face the first publishing outsourcing decision. At the time, the Stationers' Company of London had a monopoly on printing. And Cambridge University Press had to decide whether to print with them, and there was a huge amount of pressure to do this, or to set up their own printing presses. They decided, because that was the whole point of us existing, to set our own presses up, because we didn't want someone else to control what we were disseminating. I was sitting on the train this morning, and I read the front page news about WikiLeaks and Amazon pulling their hosting, and I thought, that's still the same thing, isn't it? Should WikiLeaks have thought about who they're going to put their outsourcing to before they put their hosting with Amazon? So I think it's still relevant. So learning point number one is I think you need to think about when you're outsourcing, who do you want to have control of the key part of your process? Back in the 16th century, printing was the key component. We wanted to control it. It's not quite the same level, but we looked at Highwire a few years ago for journals, and in the end we decided it was partly cost, but actually it was control. We decided we're going to stay in-house with our own platform. So that's my quick history lesson. That, just for your interest, is the first book that Cambridge University Press published. Those who are sharp-eyed might notice it came out in 1584. That means our first schedule was 50 years for our first book. We've got better, I hope. Production functions. We're completely XML-first workflow journals and books, and I claim, although some of the company probably disagree, we're format agnostic. The end product doesn't matter. We'll produce it, and we'll produce the content, and we'll make it into a format. So I'm going to have a little pop at Suzanne. I don't know why this is called an e-production conference, because I think production and e-production is the same thing. I can't tell the difference between the two. Although printing's in there, so I suppose it is. Those are the scope of the areas, I think. They're not all of them, but those are the sorts of things you might want to outsource. I tried to map them onto a grid, and this is just to prove that outsourcing isn't new. So this summer of all these complaints I've been having from various people isn't new. This is a sort of generic model. I think this applied about 10 years ago. Typesetting offshore was happening. In fact, Mac India is probably about 35 years old now. I can't remember how old it is. This isn't what the press looks like, by the way. It's just a model I came up with. I thought this is fairly standard. The only reason I put it up there is to point out the definition of outsourcing. I think you have in-house and local. You have out-house, but in the same country. And then you can have offshoring, which is out-house. But it could actually be your own company, and it could be in another lower cost wage location. And I've been talking to Richard about this. Both Sage and Cambridge are looking at filling that bottom quadrant in, which I would argue is a sort of outsourcing. So I don't want to dwell on that. I just wanted to go into some of the areas in more detail. Non-contentious areas, aren't they? Well, let's go backwards. Printing. 426 years on from Henry VIII, 97% of the books that I'm responsible for get printed in Cambridge University Press. We're an anachronism, we have our own printers. Because it's on video, I'm not going to say too much about this. My CEO will tell me off. But there are some interesting issues around that. One of the most puzzling bits is, originally, the decision to print was to give us control. There comes a point where you can have too much control. It's called responsibility. I have to actually keep the books flowing at a constant rate so the printing house can actually work at the right rate. The rest of you, I guess, who are in production haven't got this problem I've got. I also have two budgets to achieve. One, I have to try and underspend my publishing production budget. The other, I have to actually make sure that the printing house gets enough work and achieves a budget. So it's a real pain having to control it. I've seen the same thing happen with in-house supplies in other areas, in software development. Sometimes there's a requirement to keep them busy because you've got a bunch of expensive programmers sitting there looking out the window being bored, and it actually ends up with the supplier dictating the publishing needs, and that is a major complaint I say we'd have at the press. There are some real upsides of having your own printing house, by the way, as well, but just want to point that out. Typesetting. Oh, that's a crappy one as well. Sorry, I've gone too far. Chris, who's here, knows this. Up until 10 years ago, we had about 70 typesetters in-house, hot metal trained, they were fantastic. It was a bit of a no-brainer to move that out-house. The cost savings were fantastic. The downside, though, is quality. So sorry, offshore suppliers, the quality is not as good. There were guys who used to run around the press, turn up at editors' desks, holding proofs in their hands, pointing to rivers down the page saying, you're not letting that out of the press. And actually, that quality was driven. I don't think I've had any offshore supplier yet query any rivers on a page. I'd quite like you guys to later, next week, get back to me. So there was a compromise there, but the cost won on that one, absolutely no doubt. But there is an issue about quality. What else am I going to say about that? Not much. Editorial services, there's a lot of pressure at the moment coming on. That's seen as a soft target, I think, from outside of production. To say, yeah, get this offshore to India, we could save a fortune. We spend about £1 million a year on that for not a very big budget. It's about 25% of my production budget is spent on that. And everyone's saying, take it off to India. I think in production, somehow we seem to understand the core values of the press more. Cambridge University Press published the Judith Butcher Guide to Copy Editing. She worked for the press. We're actually judged by our authors on the quality of our copy editing. And although everyone keeps looking at the numbers saying, do it, shove it offshore, both our authors and actually our editors, a secret in their hearts, don't want us to do that. So I think one of the learning points we've got there is, if you're going to outsource it, you need to look at whether it's one of your core values of your business and what damage is that going to have. And that's really where we are with copy editing. We've got 25% of our journals have gone offshore, but pretty much books are stuck. They're stuck in the UK. They're done out-house, thank God. But they're done basically locally in the UK. How am I doing on time? Going fairly fast. So I tried to actually have a go at categorising what the drivers might be. And I think it's fairly obvious. Printing presses are not cheap things to have in your basement. Typesetters aren't either. But I think that actually applies in the new technology as well. We're currently looking at both Java and Documentum programmers and thinking, these people aren't cheap, are they? So we're probably going to want to have some sort of model of outsourcing some of that because we can't afford to have them all in-house. And bottlenecks. Having in-house suppliers, as I mentioned, causes bottlenecks. So maybe there's a good reason for going out. So that was just a quick go. Maybe some of the reasons why printing, typesetting in other areas might work. Right, the contentious areas. This is the bit that is causing all the problems. I think outsourcing for most people is fairly standard. I think these three areas are the bit that actually impinge on production controllers' jobs. And to be honest, that's probably what we're talking about outsourcing now. This is where I've had production staff crying on my shoulders, complaining about it. And I've had the MD, or my MD, also leaning on me saying, we could save money, let's shift it out there, let's go for it. So we actually spent a considerable amount of time, I got my two production directors to do some really deep analysis, and we did a lot of number crunching. And I've got two bombshells to share with you. One is that the Fens is a low-cost area of employment out in East Anglia, and surprisingly, Manhattan's a very expensive area to employ people. What we actually did is we went through and we looked at the costs of our total salary costs, our OPEX bills, everything in the US, in the UK, and compared them to project management out in India. And given our workflow, which is common across both the US and UK, and given the how hard we drive our staff, which is pretty damn hard actually, we found out that it was actually cost neutral or better to be running our production management out of Cambridge than it was India, but in the US it was the complete opposite. So about 70% of the project management for the US work is done either out-house in America or it's done in India. What I think the learning there is there are two things. One is, if people are pressurising you to say, outsource it, get on with it, is check your numbers. And do it really carefully, because I don't think that outcome was not expected by even me when I set this project off and said, come on, look at this, guys. So that's number one. Number two is, we're all different. So even across one company, there were two different models that apply. It didn't just necessarily work. And to have my little pop at Wiley, it's just because Wiley do it doesn't mean it's necessarily right for you, even if it is right for America. I think there are some obvious challenges, reasons why we're reluctant to do this, and to me the top one, the emotions, is the biggest probably challenge we've got. Core values are important as well, and one of the things, conversations I have had with my staff is, what defines a publisher? Why are we there? And you know, is that an intrinsic quality we've got to have that we can't actually ship out? So up for grab areas, I'm just going to touch on these really quickly. We might answer a couple of questions before anyone asks me. Things that are probably non-contentious. Content transformation, what we do for our EPUB is we actually have written in-house scripts. I've got a couple of people in-house who actually do XML transformations. They've written scripts, they've automated the process, so we create our EPUB in-house. But we then ship it offshore to get it QA'd and a final polish, because we reckon we can get it sort of 85% right, but it needs a bit of a manual intervention, which we can't afford in-house. So we're doing a mixed model there, and it seems to work quite well, but it means we're getting the quality we want. I will mention DTDs. We actually have in-housed our DTDs in the spirit that we've actually written our own DTDs. For journals, we look very closely at NLM, and we could have outsourced the DTD to NLM, I suppose. But we decided that actually we wanted to keep control, just like Henry VIII and whatever. We decided we want to have control, but there are one or two things we want to keep. We use NLM as actually a transfer language, but our in-house DTDs are different. And we have one for academic books, one for journals. Delivery platforms is where we probably have got the most opportunity to do that in-house, offshore. We've got 65 staff in the Philippines, in Manila, who actually have grown over the past 3 years massively. And they basically do a lot of systems development and maintenance for us. And they actually have built our delivery platform for journals and for books. There are issues there. There are some great upsides. It's very cheap. The downsides are that we do have to manage them very carefully. We get bottlenecks because they're in-house. They don't actually have the domain knowledge. So some of the projects I've developed with them, I've had to sit there and say, a PDF is actually this, guys, because they just don't work in publishing. So as long as you're patient, you've got the time, it's great. I think the other thing that we've realised is it's put an extra load on the management in-house. That if you go to, I think Semantico are here, if you go to Semantico, they are dealing with other publishers, they're dealing with OEP and everybody else, and you will naturally get some industry information back through that way. You'll get best practice. We have to keep on top of that and tell our developers, this is what we want you to do, because they're not out there seeing it. They're just doing exactly what they're told. But that is where we're seeing quite a lot of traction, is where we're getting some massive savings. So, teaching you all to suck eggs. If you're going to outsource, but you're going to have to weigh up the pros and cons. The cost, time and quality are absolutely straightforward. I mean, they're the main drivers, I think. I think the other, down the bottom, is interesting, and I did have quite a chat with Richard at lunchtime about this. It might be that you actually want to do this offshoring, but in your own company, because you want to get a presence somewhere else. Sage have done this in India, they've got a presence there, and I think we're looking at it for Asia, for our journals. The publisher in charge of journals would like to be out there. We don't need to actually run them out through Asia, but it might be good. So if that happens for us, I think it will not be instead of a UK production department, it will be in addition to a UK production department. Not surprisingly, I think the cons are actually the other side of the pros. It's all down to you and exactly where your values are and what you regard as important, quality being a key one for Cambridge, where your compromise is, and that's why we're all different. I think different people will map themselves differently onto there. Right, hurtling through as fast as I can. Quick summary of why you know, some of the things you might want to think about if you're going to do this. The high-level summary is, I think you need to have your eyes open if you're going to outsource stuff. You've got to be open-minded about it, and you really want to review it because things change. And the assumption that, you know, it will stay forever like that may not work. You may want to change it as technology changes. So, going back to the definition of publisher and jumping forward. So 500 years on from Henry VIII, so 24 years in the future, I'm assuming King William's on the throne and he's got less marital problems than his predecessor. He decides, I'm going to set up an academic publisher to publish special interest titles about the monarchy. So I was wondering, what will those 16th century consultant descendants of the 16th century consultants think this thing looks like? Because there's the opportunity to define it again. Will they do what they did in 1534 and say, a publisher does absolutely everything? Or will they actually outsource the whole lot and it'll be a virtual company with one person sitting there? I'm just thinking about the production department only, and this is where Richard's going to probably come and pick me in a minute. I think, possibly, you're going to have a procurement manager, because you're going to outsource something and you're really going to have those skills. You're going to want someone doing that. You're going to, production is project management. I mean, that's what we all do. So you're going to have a project management function of some sort. I think quality is intrinsic to what we do as well. We're defending the quality of the company and the brand. So I think you're going to have some sort of quality manager there as well. I think it'd be sensible probably to have some sort of R&D, some innovations guy, actually looking at what the suppliers are suggesting they can do for the processes, plus also what you might do with your PDFs or your HTML. So you'll have some innovation. But I think most importantly, you're going to have some sort of relationships manager. That's because I actually believe that it's the relationships in publishing that are most important. It's that author-publisher relationship. And that, to me, is actually what the core function of a production controller is. So I actually feel somewhat cheered up by the fact that we're going to still need that function, talking to the authors. I don't think it's going to get outsourced. So I think the production department will still exist in 2034 in some sort of unit. A couple of things to end on, though, which I just wanted to do, stand on my little soapbox and bang on about. Yeah, I'm being lent on all the time. The press are desperately trying to make ourselves, we're not for profit, but we need to be more profitable. We're desperately trying to make it better, and we're being lent on to outsource, and we can't afford not to. Typesetting was an obvious one. I do worry, though, can the industry afford us to? And again, I was talking to Richard Lundstein about this. My first job in publishing, I did a biology degree. I knew nothing about it, and I spent my first 8 months on the phone all the time to typesetters and printers saying, what's a piece of film and what's CRC? And they basically patiently educated me for years. I spent a lot of time sitting at various typesetters scattered around Essex, late at night passing final CRC for press and watching them type in. That was the training I got. I got a huge amount of training. Now, if we assume that the Fens are not really a low-cost area and a lot of this outsourcing is going out to the Philippines or Vietnam, I really worry how my staff get that communication and get that knowledge. They certainly aren't getting it now. There's loads of stuff they don't know that I think is just taken as read. And so I just have a real concern with all the outsourcing going on is how we actually keep that knowledge actually in our more junior staff, who one day hopefully will be standing here and giving a talk like this. I think that's a real concern. So that's a bit of a downer. I'm kind of hoping that Richard is now going to cheer me up by persuading me that actually the production department is still valid in the 2034 and that maybe those skills will be there.
Thank you very much. Any quick questions? If not, we'll plough on. Let's, you may have